Ottawa police's violent takedown and arrest of black man caught on camera. Saskatchewan teachers continue their work to rule. Canada will allow more Gazans to come to Canada under temporary resident program. Vale is sued in Dutch court over a dam break in 2015 that triggered a massive mudslide in Brazil and inside Argentina's first 100 days with Javier Milei. Good morning. It's Wednesday, March 20th. It's the first day of spring, folks, and we have a snowstorm. Here are your headlines. First, we start in Ottawa, where the violent arrest of Kane Niondegara was caught on video. CBC's Arthur White Crummie called the arrest, quote-unquote, forceful. Niondegara is from Burundi, and police claim that they mistook him for someone else, and then they slammed him into the ground after having chased him. They used a stun gun on him and kicked and punched him. White Crummie quotes, quote-unquote, one former officer, explaining how these things can easily happen. Quote, but the incident also highlights the gravity of split-second decisions police have to make under volatile conditions, unquote. The cops also explained that they were justified in their use of force because Niondegara ran away when police... Well, they don't say how police approached him, whether they approached him calmly, said who they were looking for, or if they just attacked him, which is, of course, material to this whole conversation, considering if a cop started chasing, I don't know, anyone, they would probably run away. This is how Carleton professor and former Ottawa cop Gregory Brown explains it. Quote, when an individual runs, that behavior is consistent with a guilty person. So that would certainly get the police officer's concern and officer safety considerations amped up, unquote. Carleton students, I hope you're not paying to hear this professor's opinions. He adds, quote, I'm not the be-all and the end-all adjudicating these matters, but in my opinion, that would be entirely appropriate for an officer to kick somebody if they were concealing their hands and refusing instructions to comply by showing the officers their hands. The Alliance des Burundais du Canada's Martin Rita Sabushimike said that the community has been traumatized by the incident. White Crummie makes an interesting editorial decision in this article by asking only white professors as experts. The black voices in the piece are all positioned as speaking on behalf of black people, while the white men with two opposing opinions are given the air of neutral arbiter. One of those is Scott Wortley, who's a criminologist from the University of Toronto. He reminds readers that cops can't just be violent to someone who walks away from them, and that cops might say that there is more danger when they deal with black men, which is the most basic example of racism that one could imagine. Anyway, Ottawa police said they regret having caused stress and fear. Next to Saskatchewan, teachers are continuing their job action while also calling on the province to agree to binding arbitration to actually deal with negotiations. Binding arbitration is when both sides use a third party to help arbitrate a collective agreement. Rather than them going back and forth and back and forth, deciding what each other is willing to live with, a mediator goes between the two sides. The sides first agree on the mediator, and then they agree that the decision of the mediator is final, that they will accept what they are offered. There are a lot of downsides to binding arbitration, but it's generally used as a final option when nothing else seems to be moving at all at the bargaining table. Though I will note that the Saskatchewan teachers are not yet on full strike. That's always something that they could do. I mean, we just had a 6-week strike. It sucked, but it was okay. Though I know Saskatchewan is not Saguenay. Well, due to the job action, the province's biggest basketball tournament is being threatened. It's called Hoopla. CBC talked to students who obviously would not like to miss the Hoopla because they made the tournament. A group of students and parents from Priestville, Saskatchewan, targeted the union to demand that they agree to work, probably for free, as work to rule is usually when teachers stop volunteering to do extra stuff that they are not paid to do, nor should they be expected to do, and allow the Hoopla to continue. The parents and kids from Priestville met with Angela Banda from the teachers union, who said that she was proud to see the students take political action. And this, quote, but teachers are fighting for something bigger than that. They're fighting for funding to ensure that classrooms are safe. They're fighting for predictable, sustainable funding to ensure that education in the long run is quality. And right now it isn't. And we're worried about the future of our education system. CBC then posits Hoopla students against the Optimist Concert Band Festival participants, who said that they don't want to see Hoopla being used as a bargaining chip. And other students are quoted too, like Kaya Newman from Aiden Bowman Collegiate in Saskatoon, who said that students will be walking out of school to show their support for their teachers. That takes me back when my teachers were also on work to rule and they created a scabby student government that tried to still do stuff during the work to rule period. But instead, the students went on uniform strike to support the teachers, and it was awesome. I was in grade 9. Hoopla or no, the kids always know what's up. Too bad the parents don't know enough, though, to protest the Legislative Assembly rather than the teachers' union. Education Minister Jeremy Cockrell called binding arbitration negotiating with a gun to his head, which, dude, it so is not. Next to national news. You might have caught this on Monday night or yesterday, especially if you listened to the bonus episode of Sandy Noor that we released. The Canadian Press's Laura Osman is reporting that Mark Miller, Canada's Minister of Immigration, is going to increase the number of people who will be allowed to come to Canada from Gaza. Now, the story itself is a bit confusing. The ministry says that no one whose names, quote, Canada has put forward have been able to cross the tightly controlled border, unquote, which is weird because Canada can only approve people to come to Canada after they've crossed, presumably, the Rafah border crossing. Miller said that he's pleading with Egypt and Israel to let people out, but there are already many people who have left, who are in Egypt, and they've passed all the steps, just waiting for the Canadian government to make a decision. This is where the story doesn't make a ton of sense, because the people who've already left Egypt and who've submitted their biometrics and who've submitted and passed their safety and security checks, they are in Egypt. So what border he's talking about is not clear. Yes, it is a disaster that is very, very difficult to get out of Gaza without paying money. Most people are paying money to get out of Gaza. But the Canadian program requires you to get out of Gaza to be able to successfully apply. So the story is missing some details or conflating some things, or Miller is being unclear. I don't know. We'll have to, I guess, watch in future days how the reporting happens. But at the end of the article, Osman mentions this, quote, immigration lawyers and family members have warned that dozens more people are in limbo and unclear on whether they are still eligible for the program after making it across to Egypt by other means, including paying private companies to negotiate their exit with Israeli and Egyptian officials, unquote. This is interesting because, again, unless my sources are wrong, there are some people who've passed all of the hurdles and have to be able to come to Canada and who are currently in Egypt waiting for the decision. If Canada doesn't allow them to come to Canada because they've left Gaza and they've left Gaza through those means, paying to leave Gaza to an Egyptian company, even though the Canadian website says you must leave Gaza to complete the application, that you cannot do the biometrics part as part of the application in Gaza, it seems like a weird fear that the government would renege on their promise to get people out and bring them to Canada. Now, Osman doesn't tease out this concern from the lawyers, so we're left with more questions than answers, including the most important question, how many more people are going to be allowed? It's 1,000 people right now, and they don't actually say what the increased number will be. At least this is something to celebrate. The government is willing to increase that number, and maybe they're being coy about the number because they'll actually start letting people in without a cap. We'll see. Next to Amsterdam, where victims of a massive dam break in Brazil are suing the company responsible for $3.8 billion. The companies targeted are Vale and Samarco, and the action is being brought forward by a Dutch nonprofit group. There were almost 1,000 businesses and more than 77,000 people who were impacted by the disaster caused by the Mariana dam break. It killed 19 people and caused a huge mudslide. Reuters reports that the mudslide, quote unquote, severely polluted the Rio Doce River. Vale said that they've already allocated the equivalent of $7.3 billion to repair the Fundão Dam and compensate people impacted. Vale has also been ordered to pay the equivalent of $9.4 billion in damages by a Brazilian court, but this action is seeking compensation for individuals who are impacted. It's being heard in Holland to target Samarco and Vale's Dutch subsidiaries. And finally to Argentina, where Javier Milei has been in power for 100 days, and things are not going super well for the far-right politician. Recall that when he was elected, inflation was 143% and poverty was at 40%. The country owed $110 billion to external creditors. Milei took swift action. He devalued the peso by 50%, cut the number of ministries in half, and cut state subsidies for fuel, notes Al Jazeera. Now, Milei's party doesn't have very many seats. They have 38 of 257 seats in Congress and 7 of 72 seats in the Senate. So one of his first moves was to issue an emergency decree to be able to bypass the Congress. Classic fascist tactics. He did that and then tried to push his plan of deregulation and privatization of state services through to the Senate. His decree would have amended or eliminated 366 laws. But people took to the streets, and the General Confederation of Labor filed for a court to intervene, which it did, and suspended the worker-related reforms. They were found to be unconstitutional, and Labor didn't just take legal action, they also called for a general strike. This past week, the Senate rejected Milei's emergency decree. This will force him to try and get his bills through the Congress. And this past Monday, massive protests in Buenos Aires protested Milei's cuts to social programs. Police responded with violence. The protests were coordinated by the labor movement and other social movement groups. Protesters threw stones at police, injuring two cops and one journalist. Deutsche Welle reports that inflation is now over 270% and half of the population lives under the poverty line. Milei's radical cuts created a surplus in the government's books for the first time in a long time, which was praised by the International Monetary Fund. Those are your headlines for Wednesday, March 20th, this beautiful first day of spring. I'm Nora. You're listening to this podcast at sandynora.com, on the Real News Network podcast feed, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Yesterday, we sent out three episodes. I mean, that's the worst thing I think we probably could have done in terms of getting our podcast into people's ears. It's just too much content. But you know what? It was important. So I hope you do take a moment to listen to the bonus episode we released yesterday. It's only 20 minutes long, and we go through what happened with this vote on Palestinian statehood. Is it a victory? Was it a defeat? Is it a tiny, tiny, tiny step forward? Was it meaningless? We go through it all, and I hope you enjoy the analysis. I will talk to you tomorrow.